It is a pleasure for me to be in Paris and to speak on behalf of the Auriez collaboration on the Auger detector and its capabilities to detect neutrinos in different channels. I have split this talk in three parts. The first part will be just a short discussion on the challenge of ultra-high energy cosmic rays. We already heard about it this morning, how it was a priority for astroparticle physics. Then I will talk also briefly on the connection between neutrinos and cosmic rays, talking about production, transport, and detection. And finally, I would just tell you about the status of the Auger observatory that is now being constructed in Argentina. Well, there is a twofold motivation to study ultra-high energy cosmic rays. One is from particle physics. We are really testing the highest energies available to mankind. And another one is from astrophysics. We don't know what the origin of these particles is. It's an unresolved puzzle. And we also have a possibility to do new astronomy if the sources of these particles are nearby, or learn about the B fields, which we don't know much about. Well, this is the energetic region that Auger is geared at. We are supposed to be having close to full efficiency above 10 to the 18 electron volts. And this is how it compares to terrestrial accelerator experiments for the testing of high energy physics. The data has been studied with two techniques. One is the fluorescence technique, and the other one is an array of particle detectors. These techniques rely on the showers that these high energy particles produce in the air. They give fluorescence light, which can be detected by phototubes looking at all sky. This is the fluorescence technique. Or they can be seen, the shower front can be seen when it reaches the ground because they are highly energetic, and it turns out that they get to about the maximum of the development when they come in the vertical direction at ground level. So these are the two successful techniques that have been used so far to get these particles that we know exist and that are in the highest range, reaching 10 to the 20 and above. There is some discrepancy between the two classes of experiments. It seems that the fluorescence suggests what is called the JCK cutoff. We also heard about it this morning, is the interactions of the protons with the cosmic microwave background, and they don't see any evidence for clustering, while the surface technique, which uses particle detectors, it's not seeing a cutoff and seeing marginal clustering. Of course, this is all very marginal, and that's what I want to stress. In fact, both techniques agree within a 2 sigma level, and both techniques agree that they detect events above 10 to the 20 electron volts. In this scenario comes the Auger observatory, which has 4 main objectives. One is to have uniform exposure and cover the whole of space. And for that, it's going to have 2 observatories, one in the northern hemisphere and one in the southern hemisphere. Then it's also built to improve the statistics. This is one of the biggest problems of the highest energy cosmic ray data. And for that, it's going to aim at having 2 surface detector arrays covering 3,000 square kilometers. And these are laid down on an hexagonal array. I'll show about it details about it later. Another of the main objectives is to do an intercalibration between the two techniques, because it's going to combine with the surface detector technique, the fluorescence detector technique, using what are called 4 eyes, which are 4 enclosures that each have 6 telescopes, and they're covering the area of the surface detector. I'll show details again later. And the last objective is to establish the composition of these high-energy particles, which is not known. And for that, there are all sorts of technical details that make this detector quite advanced compared to the previous ones, like fast ADC traces and GPS timing and combinations of the different techniques. This is what the surface detector looks like. It's a water Cherenkov tank of 10 square meters in surface, 1.2 meters in altitude, filled with purified water. and it communicates with the central station with an antenna, has GPS, it has a power supply with solar photovoltaic panels, battery system is totally autonomous, and it has three photomultiplier tubes looking down on the water to look at the Cherenkov light of the particles that go through it. The fluorescence detectors are, as I said, four enclosures. In each of them, we have six telescopes. Each has one mirror of 3.4 meters diameter and a camera in the focal plane with 440 photomultiplier tubes. One of the heavy tasks of the Auger project is to establish the composition, which is unknown, of the highest energy cosmic rays. And this is tough because you're not seeing the primary particle, you're seeing maybe a billion particles that are making the shower front as it touches the ground. If the primary is heavy, it's going to affect in that you're going to have reduced fluctuations in the interactions and in the shower development, that the shower is going to develop earlier than if it's light, and that it is going to have more muons. Incidentally, this also applies for photons, which would be even lighter in this ranking. Now, these have different ways of looking at in the shower development that I'm not going to discuss in a lot of detail, but they have to be studied with a lot of care, and that is what is being done with the collaboration. The project is being constructed in southern Argentina, in the province of Mendoza here, and it consists of 1,600 tanks, surface detectors, and four fluorescence eyes, and they are laid out, the fluorescence eyes, on the perimeter of the array, and this is the final project. I will now take a digression and talk about the neutrino cosmic ray connection. And the connection is threefold, because cosmic rays produce neutrinos, and it's very difficult to conceive of any mechanism to produce these very high energy particles that does not produce neutrinos. Either is by, you can classify the cosmic ray sources by whether they produce neutrinos through interactions with matter or radiation, or by fragmentation. And these are usually the top-down models in which very high energy particles, from X particles from cat theories or whatever, are fragment down and produce pions and eventually neutrinos. Now, of course, these high energy particles have to come from somewhere and they interact with the cosmic microwave background. This is the JCK cutoff, supposed to cut off the spectrum at about 10 to the 20 electron volts. And it's also supposed to give a neutrino spectrum as a result of it. So these two are intimately related. And the detection is also connecting cosmic rays and neutrinos, because neutrinos would also produce air showers, and you can also detect them with air shower detectors, such as Auger or USO in the following talk. Now, one of the important things is that measuring the ratio of proton to neutrinos, it's, as was mentioned this morning by Karl Mannheim, is important, is one of the important issues, because it's going to establish the difference between the two mechanisms for producing of high-energy cosmic rays, whether it's acceleration or fragmentation, and there's an order of magnitude difference in the proton-to-neutrino ratios. I'm going to show you a little film about how the JCK develops on the green curve will be just the emission from one source, which is supposed to be a simple e to the minus 2 power law. This is all normalized to the original spectrum, so these units are arbitrary. And then how does that, you push it away in terms of the redshift, and then you integrate over a uniform distribution, this is with the black curve, and the red curve will be the same, but supposing a very strong evolution of the sources.
I don't know what's going on.
It did work before. Anyway, it's working on my screen. I don't know why it isn't working here. Anyway, neutrinos, on that graph, what was basically shown that you didn't see is that the flat spectrum, e to the minus 2, develops a cutoff which stays pretty stable at about 10 to the 4 times 10 to the 19 or 5 times 10 to the 19, I get a pile-up effect. It's a cutoff, a pile-up effect, and then there is a build-up, a change of slope, which is to do with the electron-positron production by the cosmic rays also interacting with the cosmic microwave background. And you can also correlate the two, this development with the development of the neutrino flux that comes out of it, and you can see that there's quite a difference between the relative fluxes of protons and neutrinos in different evolutionary scenarios. This is what I wanted to show. Well, you can also detect neutrinos through air showers, neutral current and charge current, muon and tau neutrinos will produce mainly hadronic showers with the hadron debris, and sometimes double showers if they have the right energy, which are just two showers separated by a big gap. And in the charge, for the electron neutrinos in the charge current regime, you would get a mixed contribution from electromagnetic showers. This is photons and electrons and positrons mainly, and hadronic showers, which have a higher component of muons. And usually, it is expected to be the energy is expected to be split in these ratios between the two showers. Now, it's been known for a long time that you could detect inclined showers by looking at horizontal air showers. Now, it turns out that the depth of the atmosphere is about 1,000 grams per square centimeter in vertical direction. But when you look in the horizontal direction, you get to 36,000 grams. Now, if you start a shower that develops at some point, let's say 24,000 grams, at 25 or 26,000 grams, it will be fully developed. And this is the electrons and the photons in the shower, how they, you can see that they, in fact, this curve is due to cascading, and it goes down all the way down here in an exponential mode. What happens is that you have penetrating particles, which are muons, that go all the way down to ground, and they give a halo of electrons and photons just by hard processes, and pair production, and Bremsstrahlung mainly, and decay. And this is this other component of the shower. So the summary of the story is that if you detect vertical showers, you're looking at this component. This is dominant over this. Well, not this, but actually you're looking here. So you're still dominant over the muons. And if you're looking, and you're looking at what we call Young showers, and if you look in the horizontal direction, you're looking at this tail of muons that we can actually see. Well, if you look for showers that are coming in the horizontal direction, but they look like vertical showers, it means that they've been produced very close to your detector. So they have to be very penetrating, so they are probably neutrinos or something even more exciting. So if you detect such showers, then you would be looking for neutrinos. The way to look for the effective target volume of Auger, well, was done by us and Groening and some other collaborators. And we assumed a very conservative calculation in which we only looked at the electromagnetic part of the shower. And assuming, well, a number of conditions, and this is the technical value of the signal that we demanded on the tanks. We looked for two cases in which either the shower falls within the array, the surface detector array, or the shower core maybe falls outside but still triggers the array. Now, of course, there's a quite difference at high energies. These are very high energies. And you can see that the equivalent target volume of water is actually very high. Incidentally, this is, I just glanced through this. I want to say that the study of the background of these neutrino-induced showers is actually cosmic rays. And it's taken us a lot of time to study these showers. And it's had a very interesting spin-off because we have been able to analyze Haber Park data, which is another old detector with water Cherenkov tanks, and get a very competitive bound on composition of photons at very high energies just by looking at these inclined showers that are seen and can be analyzed already in the Haber Park data and, of course, in Auger. The timing is different for the young showers and the old showers. And this is actually Auger data showing how the flash ADC traces on different detectors at different distances from the shower axis give, for an inclined shower produced by a proton, a very sharp pulse, while for a vertical shower, which is a typical cosmic ray, will give you a very structured signal over a very wide period of time. Well, it's also been studied what is the neutrino, tau neutrino acceptance by the detector. This has been a more recent study done here in France, in Paris. And it turns out that at low energies, it does improve the acceptance, although there are some questions about identifying the showers themselves. The mechanism is that neutrinos, of course, produce go glancing through the surface of the Earth, and they eventually give a tau flux, and the tau comes out of the Earth and makes a horizontal shower, very close to horizontal. It's a very small solid angle of about 2 degrees over the horizon, and decays. And that, if it's sufficiently energetic, can be detected by the Auger detector. These are the kind of areas that are active on the ground at different altitudes of the decay for different tau decay channels. And this is a summary of the two modes of detecting. This is through the tau neutrinos, and this is through the horizontal showers coming from up to down. And finally, there are some developments that have been done on studying the time structure of the muons that are hoping to allow us to get more detail about inclined showers, and possibly will allow us to put the limit that we can say about neutrinos from inclined showers coming from up to down better. And now I'll get to discuss how the Auger Observatory is developing. It's now the largest observatory of high-energy cosmic rays in the world. This is the central building in Malargüe, and the Auger collaboration is made of 16 countries, where it's made actually of 350 scientists from 16 institutions in 16 countries. We have a planned schedule that is being followed pretty closely. From the year 2000-2001, we built the engineering array, which validated the detector with 32 surface detector tanks. 2002-2003, we started pre-production, in which we made an array with 100 tanks. And now, in the 2003-2005, we're expecting to finish the construction of the whole detector with 1,500 detectors. This is the status of the detector as it is of the June the 10th, just before I came to the meeting. We have 341 stations running and more actually deployed. And they are monitored continuously. This is the monitoring device called Big Brother. And this is the map. There's good progress in the analysis. We are seeing showers. This is a shower vertical, quite common one, with energy 10 to the 19, very modest. We can reconstruct the profiles, the lateral distributions. And we do also get very large events. This is a very large event. Energy close to 10 to the 20. It's a 60 degrees angle, and we can also reconstruct pretty well the natural distribution function. We also get inclined events, and these are from cosmic rays. They're quite common, and they look like this. They're very spectacular because this is also a very large energy event as well. But if they come, the more inclined they come, of course, the higher the area they reach on the ground, or they trigger on the ground, I should say. They can be analyzed. This is one event, a very relatively low energy event that was analyzed for the ICRC last year. It is done in the transverse plane of the shower. These are contour plots of the predictions, and these are the detections that were made by what was available of the array at that time, which was a very small portion of what we have now. The fluorescence detector status is also very advanced. We have one eye already running completely with 6 telescopes, 2 telescopes running in Coihueco, this is the building to it, and the building to one, the third site called Los Morados is also under construction. And the fluorescence detector reconstruction is also working very well. It works on, it uses both the geometry of the pixel alignment and the direction and the timing, and the signal is used to get the direction and the energy of the showers. Now, you can, we do get hybrid events. These are events that are seen with the surface detector and with the fluorescence detector. You can see that if you just do a fluorescence feed to the signals, you don't quite fit the times of the surface detectors, but when you do a combined fit, you can fit them perfectly, and this is telling you something on the resolution of the mono, which is of order of a degree. We also get stereo events, which are seen with 2 fluorescence detectors. These are the signals, these are the pixel geometry, and in fact, this event is quite special because we also see it on the ground array. So we see it in 3 channels. We see it with 2, from 2 different locations in 2 eyes, and with the surface detector. This is the final Auger status. This is what we have covered. Oh, sorry, this is the planned area of the array. These are where the 4 eyes are going to be. And this is what we have now. It's over 20%, over 600 square kilometers, 6 telescopes on Los Leones, and 2 telescopes in Coihueco. So I'll just go to my conclusions, hopefully. Yes. And I hope I've managed to convey that ultra-high-energy cosmic rays and neutrinos are very interrelated. Well, you know all this. Inclined showers have a very important neutrino potential. And the Auger Observatory is now at full throttle. We have the largest detector. It's performing very well. We're going to be completed, planned to be completed by the end of 2005. We expect quite a lot of events from what we are already getting. In these energy ranges, we see 400 events below 10 to the 18, 120,000 events in this range. And we expect to have the first scientific results in the next summer. So thank you very much to the organization for having that. Thank you.
We have some time for questions. Yes, there.
What is the effect of overlap in the atmospheric fluorescence and the ground array, both in terms of time and in terms of effective area?
Do you mean the overlap in area? And in? Oh, in time.
And in time, yeah.
Okay, sorry, I didn't say about this. Well, is the about 10% of the time, 10% of the events are detected with the fluorescence. So that's one of the answers to the question. And the area, of course, it depends on the energy of the events. The fluorescence detector, it has a very, one of the problems of the fluorescence technique is precisely that the aperture depends on the energy. So the higher the energy of the cosmic ray, the further away you can see. So for the highest energy events, you can probably see them from 40 or 50 kilometers. So it's a very large distance. So with one eye, you cover most of the, or a large fraction of the array. But of course, it doesn't happen for low energies.
Any other question? Comment? I don't see any. So thank you again.